Welcome, coaches and fellow split talkers. We are back again. We are off-site today. We're out in the burbs. We are taking Talking Split out to the people at Broadmeadows Basketball Stadium. At the end of an STP session that's just run, one of our guests is about to jump on the road and head out to Wodonga, and one of our guests has been up since about 4 a.m. getting out here, but we'll get into the intros in a little bit. But big thanks to Todd Anderson from Broadmeadows Basketball Association for hooking us up with the room out here, and we got this done. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. To my left, we have the lady that hasn't worked out that microphones pick up sound, even when you take your headphones off, Zoe Carr. And to the man who puts the Ash in Unfashionable. He has requested his own theme music. And we have finally hooked him up with...
There we go.
Jackie Moon.
Come on, girl.
Yeah. The one.
Perfect.
It's the me, only...
Jackie Moon.
Ash Arnott, baby. I'm back. I am back. Well, I did have a point to make this morning, Robbie. Well, firstly, I left last night to try and get to Broadmeadows on time. Quite the trek out here.
Is Broadmeadows the trek or is Clyde the trek?
Yeah, great question.
Yeah,
Clyde's close to Casey, so it's not that big of a trek for me. But yeah, it's a long trip. But I've got a little bit of a conspiracy theory. A few people I've been talking to said, man, you're really loud on the podcast. What's going on? I think you guys have colluded as a team and you said, we're going to mess with Ash a little bit here. And you continue to rise my mic. I'm not actually that loud.
What you may not understand, actually, is that we have a mute button available to us. So you get a couple of shots, but if they start to get a little bit personal,
there's a bit of a collusion, and I want the rest of the Bass Victoria listeners to understand that everyone's against me right now. And it's okay.
You're at least
I'm a man
used
of
to
the people.
It.
I'm used to it.
You are at least used to it, if nothing else.
We just want people to be able to hear you, Ash.
Well, apparently they can hear me loud and clear.
That's never been down.
Loud and clear.
We walked in the door this morning at Brody, and you know the courts are 30 meters away from the front door, and Zoe's like, "Yeah, Ash is here."
Oh yeah,
like, we knew.
Just bringing the energy, bringing the juice,
bringing the funk.
Got to bring the juice at 6:30 in the morning.
Don't have a choice at that point. So if you have managed to find us, you've managed to do it via the socials, your subscriptions to your normal podcasting methods. But once again, and I keep saying I'll get this as a drop, and I keep forgetting to do this. If you can, please like, share, retweet, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. That would help us really grow the show. We want to try and connect with as many coaches as we can. The interaction on socials over the last couple of weeks has been fantastic. We've really enjoyed it. Ash promises that he'll get back to you soon, Dom, on your question. But we do try and get back to it as quickly as we can.
Yeah, there's a limit on characters on Twitter, so I'm just trying to...
Condense
my answer back. But we'll get back to you, Dom. Thanks, mate.
Again, if you do want to reach out and talk to us or continue a conversation, you can do so with the Talking Split hashtag. You can get both these guys on Twitter with Ash's handle being...
Ash Arnott.
And Zoe's handle being...
Come on, Zoe.
Zoe Carr 85.
Excellent.
Unbelievable.
Incredible. Robbie. You know what's worse? We did this exact same thing last week.
I know.
And if you need me, you can get me on at Rob Calder or via the Basketball Victoria email account, which we've had a number of coaches reach out over the past couple of weeks, which has been fantastic. We've had a number of coaches request the SDP timetables and the venue sessions with a view to getting down and having a look, which is, for mine, a great way of getting involved with the high-performance program, but finding out what other people are doing, how it's running. It potentially can lead to applications down the road because you've seen it and you think, actually, this is something I really want to be a part of, and it can only benefit the players. Eventually, you might take one or two things from that training session and you think that will suit my group of kids. And I think that's a really good thing. So big shout out to those coaches that have been getting that done, that have been turning up to the sessions and not in an official capacity by any means, just literally sit on the sides and have a bit of a watch of the session.
Yeah, we had just on Monday night at Bendigo, had some coaches on the sideline with pen and paper and taking notes. And, you know, we had a small group due to some injuries and things. So... it was a lot of skill development stuff rather than team concept, and it was great to see them giving up their time to then come down and help out, and hopefully it gets to a point where they become confident enough to put their hand up and say, hey, I want to come regularly and get on court, because Megan doesn't have a lot of consistent support up there. She's doing a great job, but a lot of it's by herself, so if we have coaches that are coming and watching and start to get a feel for, hey, I think I could potentially do this. It'd be great for them to get involved. A
couple of housekeeping things before we kick off. Peter Lonergan Coaching Clinic at Mullum Mullum Stadium on the 16th of March, working on 2v2 decision-making in the pick and roll. Lono just presented that clinic over in Belgium with the Elite Athletes guys. So that will be a great watch. So details on the Basketball Victoria website. That will be a great clinic for anyone that wants to come along. We'll have our under 16 and under 18 girls from our SDP program on court for that. So that'll be fantastic. BA Coaches Conference, registrations have gone live with the early bird registrations available at the moment. May 4th, May 5th, up at the Centre of Excellence in Canberra. Brian Gorgian, Dee Butler and Mike Kelly is the first coaches that are announced as presenting for that. So that'll be an outstanding opportunity for coach development as well. So I do encourage everyone to get up there if they can. Lastly, came across our desk during the week. Every now and again, you get a little Zeppel bomb that you're never really too sure how it's going to explode. And sometimes it explodes very well, and sometimes you sit there and go, geez, what's he done to us? This is a very good one. So McKinnon Basketball announced during the week for the under 10 girls that they are changing their rules, which is something that Zeppel really pushed hard. Ash, do you want to take us through what the rule changes are for their under 10 girls competition?
Yeah, well, first, it's huge, Robbie, huge. Really excited. Zeppel called me straight away when he heard the news.
Loved it, Robbie.
So what they're starting with, first, the basketball size. So they decided to go from a size 6 to a size 5, which we're absolutely pumped about. For the listeners, coaches and parents out there that have been through our showcase the last couple of years, they know we've tried to do the same with the under 12 competition we've had running in our July holidays, going from a size 6 to a size 5. And at the very beginning, kids do notice a difference. They're like, oh, this feels funny. It's different. By the end of the week of the 4 days of playing, what we tend to see is it's easier for the athletes to dribble the basketball. They can now manipulate the ball however they want. It's easier for them to pass. So now they don't have to run to the ball or get closer to their teammates to make a pass. They can now pass it further away. And thirdly, their shooting form. They can now, the ball is lighter and they can now work on a proper technique. So huge start already, McKinnon. Well done. But second thing, still going. Hoop height, 10 feet to 8 feet. Now, obviously, they've got the facilities to be able to adjust all the courts they're going to use. They can adjust their rings, which is awesome. But the fact they can do both, really, really cool. And we'll definitely see some shooters coming out of McKinnon in the next couple of years. Why the change? Well, I already kind of talked about that, but more scoring opportunities was one of their big ones while they pushed it. And if I just go through some of the stats they talked about, the current landscape, which had 12 games on average, they talked about 50% of the players have not scored and the team only averages 7.15 points a game. You're watching like grass grow a little bit, wouldn't it?
It'd be a little bit tough. And I know it's something that soccer in Europe have really gone down the path of. I know with their younger age groups, they play a lot of 1v1 and it's just striker versus keeper.
Yep.
And the goal being we want our kids coming out saying, I scored 5 goals, 6 goals. Because let's face it, basketball's nice and it's a team sport and everyone loves it. By the same token, kids want to score. So they tried to find a way to manipulate their sport where their kids can walk out saying, well, I scored, I was successful today, and I really want to keep coming back because of it. So I think this leads into that fairly well with the opportunities for kids to get more points.
Absolutely.
What's exciting about it is it also will enhance creativity. So we're sitting here at an SDP level, and obviously that's a few years away for these kids that are going to be starting with a size 5 and smaller rim. But an area that we have an issue with right now is passing. And so being able to handle the ball a lot easier, having that dexterity and the coordination, I guess, more so with a smaller ball, will enhance the creativity to make passes that they wouldn't normally try and make, or that they couldn't. You know, if a coach is trying to say, hey, let's have a hook pass or outside strike zone, they're more likely to try it now because there's a higher chance of it actually coming off as opposed to with a normal size basketball.
The other one that I've heard of talking to Braden Cotter last night from Diamond Valley, so he was talking about they've now started a bit of a 3-on-3 competition for the younger kids, so that under 8 to under 12 type age group. And he said, look, after an hour, it looked like basketball. And with under-8s basketball, it doesn't usually look like basketball for probably a number of weeks. But he said that just the extra space they had to play with, and now they could start to do things that we don't really associate with a 5-on-5 team. It's basketball. More space, less pressure, they don't all gravitate towards the ball, which is a really big thing, because that's one thing we do see with the younger age groups is everyone just follows the ball around wherever it goes. Now the kids can actually shoot with proper technique because they're not being just monstered by four or five other players running at them saying, I want the ball. So it's great to see a couple of our associations taking a bit of a risk. And I understand from an association perspective, this is a risk, because if this doesn't work, then there's another association 5 minutes down the road where kids can potentially go and play. But from this end, I think it's fantastic to be able to get other athletes a different experience in basketball that potentially can help them down the road too.
I'm going to hit you with a little bit of a quote, Robbie. Progress always involves risk. You can't steal second base and keep your foot on first. And that's what I love about McKinnon and Diamond Valley you speak of. They're taking that risk. And with it, we may see great progress. And that's what we just need people in Bass Victoria to be prepared to take those risks. I think it's a really exciting time. And with that 3-on-3, the 3-on-3 small-sided games with Diamond Valley going forward, more touches. Absolutely. More touches, yep, for these kids. Now they're going to see them passing the ball more, dribbling the ball more, shooting the ball more. They've got no choice but to get better. With the under-10s, it's really, really exciting to see where this could take us in a couple of years. And props to McKinnon and Diamond Valley for making those jumps. Awesome to see.
No question. And we might try and catch up with the guys from McKinnon and Diamond Valley and just a little bit down the road, maybe 2 or 3 months, once they've had a little bit of time to settle into it and just find out how it's going. Because I think this is something that we need to continue to highlight it to a lot of the other clubs, but we need to check into.
Yeah.
Well, we need to find out, well, actually, is it working? I believe it will. But until it's been tested, how the hell do we know?
And what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Kids score more.
Yeah.
Parents are happier. Kids are happier. Coaches are happier. What would an under-10s game look like if it was like 70 to 76 at the end of the game? Like, you'd have kids walking out of there pumped. It'd be fantastic. Like, we'd have some issues with defense maybe later on in the years, but you know, that's okay. We can deal with that as we need to deal with that. But that's the real good news stories, I think, coming out of this week as well. I think they've been awesome, fantastic. Before we actually we get into the podcast.
Get on with the show, Robbie.
So the just for you, Ash.
Yeah, I like it.
I know you like the Zeppel drops.
I do.
We've spoken a little bit about reflection over the 4 or 5 weeks that we've had the podcast going on now. So from our end, it's time for a little bit of self-reflection on our own coaching to how we've got to this point. But what we're looking for is probably a little bit of story time, Ash, and that will make you happy because...
About bloody time.
But the topic we're looking at this week is what I wish I knew when I first started coaching. And this is a topic that hopefully will spark a little bit of debate and a little bit of self-reflection with a lot of other coaches as well, because we've... All of us have been involved with the game for a different amount of time at different levels as well. It's I came through the hack domestic level where I was no good and eventually ended up coaching Friday nights and state teams. Ash, you came through as the elite junior you were. We went from a centre in under-12s to a point guard in under-14s in the space of three short weeks.
Big adjustment.
Yeah, big adjustment, but came through the state pathway as well and obviously went down the college pathway. And Zoe, you came through elite junior as well, Vic Metro teams, COE or AIS scholarship at the time and into the WNBL. So we've all come at this from different perspectives. I do believe there'll be a lot of similarities over the top of this. Like, we'll probably, one person will hit on one thing and then everyone else will jump in on this, which is actually a good thing because we do want the discussion that goes with this. Like, I feel like this is a topic that can hopefully stop coaches from potentially making the same mistakes we've made over the course as well, and that can only enhance your learning. The first one, I'll kick us off. Your body language matters just as much as your actual language. So we talk about being positive and making sure that we deliver feedback and the kids are enjoying it and they're learning and they're improving. It's really hard to do if you do that with an irate look on your face. If you're the coach that throws your arms up in the air constantly on the sidelines, your body language can actually have a massive impact on your athletes, and in particular the junior athletes. Your seniors probably ignore it to a large degree. I don't know that they necessarily pick up on it, but your junior athletes, these are the same kids that will make a mistake in a game and look straight to mum and dad on the sideline. And they're looking for a little bit of validation on, was that good, was that bad? Is this an okay thing? Am I going to get yelled at in the car on the way home? Or a mum and dad that's like, ah, do whatever you want for this 40 minutes. We don't really care. We're just happy to watch you play. But your body language as a coach can be a really big thing. If you are constantly talking down to your athletes, and what I mean by that is standing over the top of them and talking down, sometimes you need to kneel to get to eye level where you can be really helpful. Sometimes you just need to clap and be positive and, hey, bad luck, that's okay, and move on with it. But your body language can really make a massive difference for your athletes and how they are receptive to you as a coach as well, I think.
Well, I had, it's funny, you know, just using personal experience when I was a player, my college coach was kind of known as the Bob Knight of Division 2. You know, his antics on the sideline were quite crazy, and It was funny. His words always said, "Hey, Ash, we want you to shoot the ball more." If I took a shot and missed it, the arms flew back, the head flew back, and you were like, I don't think he was too happy with me shooting that one. So what does he actually want me to do? Does he want me to shoot it? Because his body language is saying something else. And that's where it comes to. Like, we've all sat there and a kid's taking a shot and we've all gone, oh, can't believe he missed that. Well, that athlete sees you do that. And it's a confidence killer. And we're trying to build. We're trying to build our athletes and feel comfortable and feel confident that they can take these shots and know that their coach is going to back them in. So it's really important the way on the sideline. How are we walking up and down? How do we react to a turnover, to a missed shot? Sometimes just looking at them, we're like, hey, good job, thumbs up. It can do the world of good, and they're more likely going to make their next shot or make that layup. Or maybe just, hey, maybe not the greatest shot, but I can see where your head's at. Maybe think about this and give them some constructive criticism around it where they can learn from their mistake. But it's nothing worse than you look over to the sideline, you think, oh, that's a good shot, he'll be fine. No, coach is pretty pissed at me right now. All right.
Well, and even if the kid on the court doesn't notice it, the kids on the bench will.
Yeah.
And that will be in their mind the whole time that I don't want to cause the coach to have that sort of a reaction either. So they'll play with anxiety. And that's something we don't want any of our athletes to do. We want our athletes to play with freedom, be creative, have some flair with their basketball play as well.
I think it kind of goes both ways though too. So our body language is basically a message to our athletes. And if we're the kind of coaches that they take that shot that you think is pretty good, but it's potentially not the right shot to take, and it goes in, if you celebrate that, then you have to celebrate it when it misses as well. So the consistency in your messaging, I think, is really important as well, and consistency in your body language. I think we've spoken about it before. When you're coaching, say, any game really, but at a nationals or Friday night or even your domestic game, if you're up by 50, you have to coach the same way as if you were in a clutch game. And because that message sends to your athletes that they still need to be engaged into the game and not, you know, oh, we're up 50, game's over, that sort of thing. So I think body language, it helps with confidence, but it also helps with consistency of message as well.
And down by 50. The worst thing your kids can see is a coach sit down and check out. And it's like, hey, we'll just run subs for this last 15 minutes because this game's over anyway. You don't want to be that coach. No one wants to be that coach. So I think it's really important, the body language. And everyone will coach slightly differently. Some coaches are sitters, which is fine. Like, if that's what you are, no problem with that. Some coaches are cat on a hot tin roof stuff. Like, it's like, would you just relax a little bit and you can sort of see the stress or the energy. But that's okay. Just coach to who you are. Mm. But just be mindful that others will be making judgments on you, rightly or wrongly and fairly or unfairly, on what they see with your body language too. We've spoken about it a number of times where, as a Vic Metro coach, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Like, if you get up and you keep coaching, everyone hates you because it's like, oh, what are they doing?
Calm down.
Yeah, look at this arrogant coach that continues to go. You can't win. So just be who you are, but let your body language be a little bit more free rather than really tense, because tense causes tension everywhere, not just with you.
A really important time to be mindful of your body language too is if you know, you've gone into a timeout, quarter time, half time, whatever it might be, and you think you've drawn up the greatest play in the world that's going to get you a score, and they either fall out of it or they miss the shot or whatever it might be. Sometimes as coaches, and it's probably one of the things I would say is something I wish I knew, sometimes as coaches, because, you know, that was our chance to contribute to the game and that mere moment has then just slipped away from us, we can lose it. Like, we can show that body language of you almost like you ruined this for me, even though that's not what we're doing and it's not conscious, but that's how it can come across. And then that puts into the athlete's mind that you're here for you and not them. If things don't work, if you've put things on a whiteboard and it hasn't worked, look into why, because the answer could actually be your original message.
A really big one for me. Well, I didn't realise how important the relationships, and we'll say with stakeholders. Who are those stakeholders? Players. And then the communities around that athlete. So our other stakeholders and with other coaches, parents, obviously a huge one. Because a lot of my coaching, I came into it firstly in camps, domestic, where it's not as full on, and then off to college to coach, you rarely deal with parents at college level. You're normally dealing with 18 to 20, 23 year old athletes. So coming back into this space and realizing how important those relationships are with the stakeholders around the athletes was really new to me. And at first, it's a bit of a shock. How do you deal with the really happy parents? How do you deal with the really disgruntled parents? It's all learning, and you can only get better at dealing with that through experience. And being back for 3 or 4 years, it's fair to say that I've been through all of them. And you just got to grow with each moment. I think that's something that I wish I knew beforehand. And you do get a little bit of advice here and there, but it's one of those things I don't think you really truly know until you're smack bang in the middle of it. So just those communities around the athlete, how do we deal with them? Even schools, their teachers, tutors, individual coaches, all that stuff. So, yeah, definitely been a bit of a shock.
Something else that coaches need to be aware of too is there are a lot of parents, especially at a junior level, that will be your friend until there's nothing you can do for them anymore. I've had parents that have been absolutely just so warm and welcoming and, oh, can I get you a coffee, or can I, and chatty and all this sort of stuff. And then the next season when I'm no longer coaching their kid will just wipe me and not even speak to me. And that was hard to deal with. I found that really hard because I thought I had a relationship with these people, and something I wish I knew before getting into coaching was how to manage that, because I let that get to me more than I should have and took it personally when really at the end of the day they were just doing what they could for their child or their athlete.
And parents are mindful too, and we have to engage them. Absolutely. We don't have a choice.
No question.
The most important part of our game.
They get their kids everywhere. They want what's best for their child, and we have to completely understand that as coaches. So we do have to be mindful of that. But the big thing I found is just be honest.
Yeah.
Don't lie to them. If you sit there and that's little Johnny or Janie's role, tell them that's what that role is, in particular at team selection. I see your kid as the 10th player in this team. Don't lie to them and say, but I reckon they can be the 5th by the end of the season because that may never happen, and that sets them up for a whole range of problems, which will eventually be your problems. Mm. So just be honest with them and they can make the decision from there.
Transparency is huge, really huge. And they may not like what they've heard straight away, but what tends to happen is they start to respect it.
Yep.
And any time and effort that you do end up putting into that athlete over the course of the year, they really start to appreciate. And if they do come in as if you say at the very start, hey, little Johnny's, this is where he's at right now, and by the end of the year and go, look where we've gotten him, those parents respect that a little bit more.
And even from a senior level, I remember at the BA Coaches Conference, Kelly Wilson, when she was talking about relationships with coaches, and one of the things she said was, if a coach promises me everything, immediately don't trust them. If they say you're going to play 38 minutes a game, you're going to start every game, you're going to do this, we're going to get you X points, we're going to get you that, straight away that's a red flag for her. And I thought that was really interesting.
It's hard because we'd expect Kelly to play 38 minutes, start every game.
If I had Kelly. But it's a really good lesson of you want to tell, especially from a senior level, you're trying to recruit, so you're trying to get players to come to your team and want to play for you. But obviously she's a seasoned vet and has probably seen it all of where you get promised things and then don't deliver. So don't promise anything that you can't deliver.
Kind of leads us into that importance with that relationship with your players. It's very easy to lose respect.
Yep.
And it's through lying, it's through not following through with things, it's through maybe coaching one kid and not the other.
Yep.
And
inconsistencies.
Now that may not be a huge thing for an under-12s coach, but as you start to go up in levels and the kids get better basketball knowledge and older and more mature, that relationship between coach and player and that authenticity around it, being more transparent and being honest, you don't have to be a dick about it. It's just being able to have a hard conversation. Like, hey, right now, Robbie, you're not doing this, this and this, but this is how we could fix it. And I need to see it on the basketball court.
I had a lot of those conversations as a player.
I'm sorry if I'm bringing back some traumatic.
I'm a little triggered at the moment.
Sorry, mate. Sorry, but And that's another big thing I learned at college. Through those, if you start lying to athletes or you're talking nonsense to them, they're going to look you up and down and go, I ain't messing with this guy no more.
And kids now are far more switched on, I think, than they were back when I was playing. Like if a coach said to me, I want you to do this, I just went and did it. But now kids need to know the why. They need to know what's in it for them and all that sort of stuff. They're a lot more switched on and willing to ask the question too. So, yeah, they'll be more aware of if you're lying to them effectively.
And you hit on something there, Ash, as well. And it reminded me of a Dave Biwar quote that he had at our performance course not too long ago. Nobody wants you to walk in and say, this is really hard for me to tell you.
Mm.
Like, they don't care. Like they're just getting the message. Like it's, we know it's hard for you to tell, but it's going to be really hard to hear.
Yeah.
And you need to be mindful of who you're delivering that message to. Honesty is, you know, always the best policy, but how you package that can be really important as well.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest one for me was that winning isn't everything. I took a lot of my playing attitude and my playing competitiveness into coaching in the early days, and you know, I wanted to win, and I wanted to win bad. Like it was a hunger and all those sort of things. Yes, trying to win is important, but it is not at the cost of the development of your athletes. And I think I got it wrong a couple of times, and thankfully had good mentors around me to be able to guide me in the right direction. But yeah, just sort of not being dictated to by the scoreboard and being more dictated to by the development and advancement of my athletes that I'm working with at the time.
That's dependent on the level you coach. Obviously, there's an expectation if you go away with an Oz team or a state team, the expectation is that you win. We all understand that and we know the playing field, but say in a VJBL game or a domestic game, we can get caught in, if we win, everyone will be happy and that will cause me less problems. But it's actually causing you more problems because you're probably sacrificing a few kids in there to get your win.
Yep.
It's no one's expecting, and I have complete sympathy for a VJBL coach on a Friday night that might be coaching, say, VJL 5 or 6 along those lines, that has 10 players in their team and trying to get everyone in. Like, I feel like that's a nightmare for any coach. And unless you've got some serious experience, you're going to struggle with that. There will always be one or two kids every week that gets a little bit shafted. Unless you have a dedicated assistant sitting there saying, here's how we're going to sub to make sure everyone gets even minutes. But even if you do that, you're probably going to sacrifice some wins along the way to get your even minutes. And that will cause disharmony within the group as well because kids do want to win. They do want to be exposed to that. So I think it's really important that you don't focus only on the win. Like, kids don't get better if they don't play.
Yeah, well, let's be honest, coaching is such a draining and rewarding profession, right?
Absolutely.
And if we just focus on the scoreboard, And we have a team that's really struggling that year, it is going to be a long, long year.
Yeah.
So we do have to celebrate. We have to find other way to celebrate small wins. And those wins, small wins may look different from coach to coach, team to team, and that's okay as well. Find what you value and what you think could be a really small win.
So what's something that you consider to be a small win?
For me, we had back in my Berry College days, just giving them another prop there. we had a young boy that had all the talent in the world and he was just so shy. And so what we tried to do in many cases was get him becoming more confident to talk and becoming more confident in himself. And we would just have little chats with him in front of people. And I won't say, we'll just call him little Robbie. We're like, good morning, Robbie, how are you? And he'd be like, oh, okay, excuse me, Robbie, you got to speak up. And he'd be like, yeah, I'm good. What'd you do on the weekend, Robbie? And just getting him more confident around people. Then after that, we'd bring him aside. How do you think you're doing? I'm okay. Speak up, Robbie. It's okay, mate. Like, really, say it with some confidence. He'd be like, yeah, no, I'm doing well. And then we'd have him repeat to himself, I'm a good basketball player. And he'd have to say it out loud and just try to get him more confident with himself. Now, he's doing great things. He's going on. He's more confident in his game. He's now loud on the court. He's talking. He's happy to speak in front of people. And this went over a whole year. This didn't happen just in one day of trying to get him to speak more. It was just trying to get him more confident for us. That was something small but huge. And now we've seen his development, not just as a basketball player, but as a person and being able to speak in front of people. Like, it's such an important skill to have, and see how we were able to do that. And we were just we just took some risks as well. We had no idea that was going to work, and it happened. Now, with the next kid, that may not work. We need to find another way. But for us, that was a huge win, something small, but something we celebrate really big and we talk about to this day.
And you still need to be able to take those away. Yeah. Like it's, I mean, they're the ones, and I talk to coaches a lot about it. Like, you want to be that coach that gets the kid their first left-hand layup. Like, and that might be the small win, and it's like, man, we've been working on this thing for months, and like every time they shoot it with their right hand, and hey, come on, remember, left hand, you know, on the next one, and they miss it, and they butcher it, and they get frustrated, and you know, because they missed it, they go back to their right hand straight away. So that could be literally a 6 to 12 month process, if not longer, to get that left hand layup. But you want to be that person that's guided them down that path to go and get it. Like, that's a huge win. Because
yeah, and just giving them the confidence to take it with their left hand. Yep. You know, a lot of them will say, oh, I can't reach it, or I can't do it, or I can't get it in. But if you are the coach that has given them almost the platform and the freedom to be able to even just give it a go, that's huge.
Coach the individuals and the team will take care of itself. I certainly made errors earlier on that I was more worried about the team's success. And it sort of ties in a little bit with the winning, obviously, but I was more worried about getting a good team around, you know, the game, and not worried about the actual individual successes and their development pathway as well. And I coached a lot of juniors early on in my coaching career, as I think probably most people do. No one really jumps straight into seniors, but you do spend a lot of time in that sort of under 12, under 14 age group, I find, in particular domestic and the Friday night stuff. But I spent a lot of time worrying about the team's success rather than developing the individuals within that team and where they can potentially go. Because while I'm sitting there saying, I need this player to be a great screener, that player could be an outstanding shooter, but I've never given them the opportunity to be that outstanding shooter. So how do we ever know? So putting time into understanding the individual within your team and putting them on the right path, I feel, is something I really needed to do better when I was early.
When you were doing that and thinking more team than individual, how many offenses did you have?
12s and 14s was always five out. I didn't overcomplicate that. By the time I hit 16s, I was lucky. I worked with a really good coach within the state program who exposed me to the world of shuffle. And man, like when you sit there and go, oh, it's just shuffle, and we hear that a lot in coaching, oh, it's just shuffle, or it's effing shuffle. We hear that heaps, and oh, it's just first and thirds, and it's not. Like there is a whole system in place behind it, and counters, and you need to be able to read the offense and read the defense as to what's coming next. And we've set them up for this a couple of times, so now we can run that. Like, I have my eyes open to that, and it's like, man, this is a different world altogether. I certainly had an under 16 team where we would have had comfortably 12 to 15 offensive sets. And granted, they were all out at the same base, but there's 12 to 15 things they need to remember. And for some kids, they need to remember a part of it. So do I ever give the big the opportunity to pick and pop? Probably not. How do I know? How do we know if this kid's going to be a good shooter or not?
Yeah, so I think that's what can end up happening when we think more team success rather than individual success, and we end up just adding a play, adding a play, adding a play. And by the end of the season, you've got 10 to 12 offenses for under 14, under 16 athletes, and it's just insane. And what ends up happening then is that they don't run any of them properly. They run them, the detail in it just falls away, and then we still wonder why we can't score on it, so we add another play. And staying away from that and just trying to hold true to maybe one or two, depending on your age group, of course, but and getting those right, I think, is far more beneficial than running 10 offenses, you know, at half pace or at a half detail.
The importance of your own well-being when coaching. Huge one.
Yep.
Huge one. Something that recently I've just gone through, you know, working too much, putting all my eggs in the one basket, which is coaching and my profession, and you forget about being healthy, what's best for you, how do you get that work-life balance. And I know this is going to be a whole pod dedicated to this next week, which I think is really important in today's game, but being able to get my life back on track and making sure that I'm in a really positive mind when I come to coach the athletes. Because if I'm bringing in my frustrations or stress and I'm taking out on the kids, it's not going to be a very successful environment. You can't be a great coach and not look after yourself and focus on making sure that you're in a great space when you're dealing with athletes.
So what have you done to try and get that balance
I have been exercising like a madman and watching what I eat and taking time, not sticking around in the office when I don't need to be there. Go out, take some time for myself. Now, sometimes exercise, it's been the last couple of weeks just calling a mate, just checking in with them, making sure, and going having to grab a cup of coffee, sorry. I was thinking cappuccino instead of saying cup of coffee.
You were thinking beer.
Yeah. No, I'm an athlete now, Zoe. But just been working out like crazy, you know. You go from you've had a long day, you've dealt with some issues that can definitely bring stress. And, you know, we deal with so many associations, so many athletes, there's always going to be something happening. And just going to the track and running. Now, I've been very lucky where I have some really supportive people around me and have been on me about these little things. Now, it took forever to get through my thick head. And it's a fair head, Robbie, let's be honest.
I'm glad you jumped in on it.
It's a fair head, but now going out and making sure I'm in a really good place. And when I leave work, everything switches off. So now I focus on the next thing, whether that be a practice, whether that be seeing my partner, whether that be family. You have to make sure that they're the most important thing in your day now. And it's difficult and it takes time. Losing 8 kilos in 2.5 weeks also helps, Robbie. So now in a better place to be able to move around and
it's unlucky chopping off your left elbow down.
Yeah, that's it, mate. You got it done. That's it. So
I think, you're in a unique situation in terms of your job as well, being just full basketball the whole time. When I am an absolute victim to this. So I was coaching a team in NBL 1 level a few years ago, and it was a pretty ordinary situation. It was it wasn't nice for anybody for a multitude of reasons. But I let that consume me. And I think you can do that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad situation to let it consume you. You can just care so much about your team or care so much about getting your kids better or whatever it might be, or an opinion that comes through, that comes back to you, that you can easily let it consume you. And as soon as that happens, that's where bad things happen. You know, like when those things start to happen to me, I'm an emotional eater and I lose all energy and I never get full and I just keep eating and eating and eating. And it's really hard. But that was a result of caring so much about a team and trying to do everything I could for them and being in a not great situation. Now, at the end of the day, that's on me. And like Ash has done, you know, I've got to say, that's it, no more. But it's really, if I can get anything across to coaches, don't let this consume you, because as soon as it does, it will affect health, it will affect outside relationships, it'll affect work if you don't work in the space. And we just can't afford that, because that's where we lose coaches, where it becomes all too hard and it's, I don't need this anymore. And we want to try and keep coaches in the game.
We do it because we love it.
Yeah.
It shouldn't become a burden. It should be the way we are out here. We want to be happy. We want to love what we do. And the happiest coaches are also the most loved coaches. Players love turning up to play for someone really positive. It's not saying you can't go mad at an athlete. But you come with that, I guess, contagious positivity. It has a massive impact on everyone around. And that's what, like this morning, you come in, you hear me up and about. At the practice we had here this morning, it was unbelievable here at Broadmeadows. We had 6 athletes on the court and they were fantastic and they were smiling by the end, and there was mistakes made, but we got better, we grew, and it was just all our coaches were all really positive. Yeah, we picked them up on things, but a lot of positivity coming around, and just we all left the gym in a really good place. What a way to start a day.
And you're allowed to be upset with your team or upset with something that's gone on. Like, I know I used to have a rule on a Friday night. You have your Friday night game, you go grab pizza with a couple of other coaches afterwards, you debrief and you get frustrated with your team and you talk about the good things that happened as well, and you really hope that the next morning you wake up and it's just done and you get that day as clarity almost. Like, it's, we've discussed everything that went on last night, now I've woken up fresh day. Sometimes it's harder to do than others, obviously, because you can get caught up on one bad call that doesn't go your way, a miss layup or miss foul shots or something like that that has potentially cost you a win. But it is really important to move on. And that's absolutely the hardest part
it
to get
so,
right.
It is.
Like, it's, I feel almost hypocritical telling people this because there have been plenty of times where we've had the game on the Friday night and I'm still pissed walking into work on Monday morning.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus, it's happened again. Like, yeah.
I'm just glad we've got others in the office now. It used to be just just me or just Robbie watching a game and going, oh my God.
So that is a really big one. Like, I can't stress this enough. And as Ash alluded to, like, we're going to do a podcast next week on work-life balance. Well, not work-life balance, but, you know, just the balance of basketball and life and how you juggle the two of them.
Huge.
Which is a really interesting space to be into.
So my next, what I wish I knew, is minimizing stop-start maximizes training time. And I know we did a pod last week on how to maximize training time, so it's a bit of crossover there. But early days, I felt like I had to coach every single detail, stop it, everybody see it, stop it, everybody see it. What that resulted in, unfortunately, and I didn't know at the time, looking back, what that resulted in is less actual practice time for the athletes because they were too busy listening to me talk. But also I feel like there was a bit of fear. Fear for the lack of a better word, in the sense of, oh, if I do this and it's not right, she's going to stop it and everyone's going to see. And so they sort of took a step back rather than push themselves out of their comfort zone. Again, that's on me because that's the thing I can pin that on, is that every time there was something I felt needed addressing, we stopped practice and addressed it rather than just let him, give him that opportunity to learn through a bit of discovery and see if they can adjust it themselves or get them when they're at the back of a line or whatever that might be. And that was a really big one for me, because once I stopped doing that and started coaching on the run a little bit more or allowing them that discovery time, they enjoyed practice a lot more.
Well, and coaches are inherently by nature carers. Like, they coach because they care about other people and they're willing to give a part of themselves to other people. So because of that, they never want to be the reason that a game gets lost. So it's almost like, I want to give them so much information that I've covered everything off and there is no possible way that this loss, if this occurs, can be back on my fault. It might be because we shot the ball poorly or we simply played a better team and they're okay. No problem, but I don't want to be the reason, because I left something out of my training session is the reason why we lost this game. No coach wants to be that.
Absolutely.
But are you empowering your players or are you putting the handcuffs on your players? And we always say one of the greatest judges of if you've done a good job is the next team they make. And you get to find out, I had the fours and I've now seen kids go on, I make the ones. That's a tick for you, because they can go and play for anyone now. They don't just play for you. You've taught them how to play basketball rather than just how to play for your system. And difficult.
I've got a story that leads into...
Yes!
That's all I wanted. I don't actually have a story. No, I do. That leads into trying to give too much information. So in my first season of coaching, a little bottom age under 12s team, and we're in a timeout and I've got the whiteboard out and I'm going through things, you know, we're going to come out, where you're going to cut here, you're going to screen there, then the ball will come in and then we'll do this and then we're in this defense. Okay, we got it. And they're looking me in the eye, they're nodding. I'm like, how good is this? They are engaged. Unlike you two right now. No. They're engaged. They're out of this timeout. It's going to be awesome. And we put our hands in, we say our team name, and my niece, who's about to walk onto the court, says to me, Auntie Zoe, have you had your nails done? And that was a real moment for me.
You get that question a lot, Ash?
Yeah, attention to detail.
But that was a moment for me of, okay, they haven't really listened, not listened, because it's not a not listening thing. It's a sheer inability to take in that amount of information at that age. And so she's drifted off into something else that was more interesting to her. And so that was a real eye-opening moment for me on, okay, less is more.
Yeah, and I think there's a place for both too. There is definitely – we probably don't want to go every session where we're critiquing, but you also don't want to do every session where you just let them go. Let's go, like, let them figure out, let them discover. So where's that balance? I know it's something I'm still working on every year, every day, every week. How do we balance this? When do we stop? When do we start? But trying to maximise – we get such limited time now. If we are critiquing everything by the end, you go, well, I only took 4 or 5 shots, you know. Where are we getting this work and where are we able to do that? And if we do have more coaches, you can play a little bit more on the run and just pull kids out and talk to them. That's always easy, but we don't always have assistant coaches just hanging around ready to help out on the whim there. So it's definitely a balance we're all looking for, but, yeah, really good point in terms of how we're maximising that practice time.
So the next one is get yourself a coaching network.
Yeah, big one.
This
Huge.
Is, I think, probably played the biggest part in my coaching development over the course. It was usually a case of 8:30 training session at Diamond Valley. Upstairs, all the coaches that were on at 8:30 would sit around, just talk crap, in all honesty, for the next 2 to 3 hours. Sometimes it would be a case of go and watch someone else's training session together. Sometimes it was after a game or a training. Like I said, go grab a pizza afterwards and find out what it is. For Jenny, if she listens to this, it was usually a salad.
Yeah.
Not a pizza.
Of course.
Never doubted you.
It was find a coaching network of people that you can learn from and learn together with and people that will challenge you. You don't want to all be at that same level. I feel like you need a couple of people that are maybe a little bit ahead of the pack, some that are a little bit behind the pack, but grow as a group. And you know, we spoke about it a little bit last week, like, hey, road trip up to Canberra together to go to the BA Coaches Conference. Those kinds of things are great opportunities to network and have people that you can bounce ideas off, because coaching can be real lonely at times. When you're driving back from La Trobe on a Friday night, who can you talk to? Like, the only people you can really talk to is potentially your family, and even they will probably hang up on you at about 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night, or other coaches. And you just get to find out what everyone else is doing. There's a little bit of satisfaction in everyone having the same problems you have as well. Like, misery does love company, but so does positivity. So find other people that are passionate about it with you and grow with them.
You know, people talk about when you look at your friends and who's around you, if you look at them and you think, you know, you see growth, you see inspiration, then you've got a great chance of being successful. But if you look around at your friends and the network of coaches that are around you and you don't see that, well, they say it's just like being in a cage and you're not, it's going to be difficult for you to grow and get better. And so that leads me to, don't be afraid to ask for help. A lot of the time, especially in the coaching world, we think if we do ask for help that we're not capable. But you asking for help or asking for ideas or what did they see, now you're allowing yourself to grow and become a better coach. And it's really important for young coaches. It's okay. Ask for help. When I first came in, I had the world's biggest ego. I'm not afraid to talk about that. Like, I thought I knew everything. Then I went to college and started working with guys who've been in the NBA and long-time college head coaches, and they're using words, and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? And hoping that they don't come to me and ask me to run a drill or speak to them about certain actions, because I had no idea what they were. And it was eye-opening. And my coaches on my staff had coached with or under very militant coaches that expected them to be there from 7 to 5, so we did the same thing. And in the first couple of weeks, I was bored. I was like, what the hell do we do? And I started to study the game and ask questions. And it became addictive because I could tell that my knowledge was growing and game situations were getting better and player management was getting better. And there's so many different areas that you can improve in. And even coming back here, we've talked about in past pods, I've watched an under-14-4 team and taken a drill from that coach and just – you know, played around of it and how do we make it your own and fit into your philosophy. There's so much learning going on and we don't expect everyone to know everything. So go ask for help. I still make calls. I've got calls I make, weekly calls, monthly calls, quarterly calls, and maybe just a coach I call once a year. What can I give them and what can they give me back? How do we steal off each other? Because that's what it is, right? We're just taking from everyone and trying to make it our own. So please, young coaches, ask for help. Ask for guidance. How are we going to get better? Don't think that you know it all.
If you're going to ask for help, please don't be a yeah, but coach. So if I say, Ash, can you come and give me some feedback? Come watch my game and give me some feedback. and we get to the game, you come and give me my feedback, and let's say it's
but you're wrong.
Correct. Like, if you give me some any type of feedback about anything, but when that happened, that will very quickly get people that are more than willing. I've found coaches in basketball, can't speak for other sports, really open to helping. Like, it's a really good community. But that will very quickly get somebody to say, okay, I'm not going to do this again. And it's not to say you can't have your opinion. It's not to say that, you know, whatever that feedback is always correct. But don't ask somebody to come and help you and then argue with their help.
It's one of those things. I didn't even know I used to say but a lot. I didn't know until my partner was like, stop saying but. Like, I don't listen to anything that you said before that word. I was like, what did I say that? And it, you know, got in a lot of trouble. So it's interesting. A lot of our young coaches probably don't even realize they say that as well. Yeah. The other thing, Robbie, here's a question for you on this network. How does one, if they want a mentor, how do they get a mentor? Is it as easy as just going up, Robbie, I want you to be my mentor?
Yeah, don't come to me for a start. I feel you can do better than me being your mentor. It is as simple as ask. Mm. And if someone says no, you probably don't want them to be your mentor anyway.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the right person for you. You want people that are prepared to get over themselves a little bit and say, yeah, I want to tip back into someone else. No coach has ever got to where they get to without the help of others.
Yep.
And I feel like those that have moved on down the pathway or got to wherever they get to, there's maybe 5 or 6 coaches that have got them there. And they're appreciative and can probably, and I'll talk to both of you too, you can probably name the 3 most influential coaches you've had. Not necessarily when you were a player, but as a coach, that have helped you along the pathway.
Oh, I can name the top one right now, yeah. Mr. Charles Ryan.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't be anywhere without that man.
Exactly. But people acknowledge that and coaches acknowledge that. So it's almost a tip of the hat, so to speak, when someone comes up and says, hey, can you mentor me? It's like, geez, this feels pretty good. Like, it's a really good thing to be asked that too, because there's an opportunity to pay it forward. So they'll remember all the cool stuff that got done for them and who helped them out along the way and try and pay that forward onto the next person.
The other thing too, Robbie, there's some of these, our young coaches probably don't realize they're being mentored.
Yep.
And they need to take a think about, oh, is there anyone at their club or around their association that continually checks in, asks them questions, challenges maybe on a few little things they saw in their practice? That's mentoring right there, and they probably don't even realize that, well, they've got one there.
No question. And sometimes you want someone from your club, someone that you can, you know, touch base with fairly regularly, but sometimes you want someone completely removed. Doesn't even have to be a basketball person. Yeah. Like, I know when I've had to make big decisions, I've gone to people from a business background. Here's the plan A, here's plan B, which one? And you get a completely different perspective that's not basketball related, but can really help put a few things into perspective of, I never realized that I got clouded by basketball.
Now, I have 2 business mentors that they are from the basketball world, but when we do talk, it's around how do they deal with people and how do they deal with different structures within their business and a little creative thinking. How would you go about that? It's been really interesting sitting down with these gentlemen and having a coffee. Like, one of those gentlemen spoke to me about how to run a better meeting, and we've talked about this in the office. You know, how do we create a better agenda? How do we make the most of our meetings? And it can apply to our coaches' meetings, and it makes us a better coach as well. So, agree with you, Robbie. Go outside the circle and find different ways. We can learn from so many other different codes and the business world.
And as well as feedback is not necessarily criticism. So don't take it personally if somebody is challenging you, whether it be at a practice, a game, whatever it might be. See it for what it is. They're trying to make you better. Be happy with the fact that somebody's investing their time to help you. They're not criticizing you. And that probably leads into my next, what I wish I knew, is to try and figure out, and I still don't have this right yet, but figure out what messages to take in and what to block out. There are a lot of opinions in the basketball world. A lot of armchair experts, a lot of avenues for people with social media now, forums, whatever it might be, to be able to jump on and give their opinion, which may be quite hurtful. And that in the beginning, when I used to read those sort of things that people would say about me, that got me. Like, that really hurt. Like, it hurt. You know, I'd sit there and think to myself, I care about my kids. I'm working, you know, my butt off. I'm trying to do everything right and you're still saying this about me. And it really hurts. So being able to block that out and understand that people are more than welcome to their opinions, but unless they're sitting right beside you during game time or at practice or whatever it might be, at the end of the day, they don't know the inner sanctum of what's going on with your team. So they're, unless you've sought them out or there's somebody you trust or they might be a mentor, try and block that out as best as you can, because that can very quickly lead you down the coach welfare track of being consumed by opinions of other people.
I used to go to football. I'm an avid Essendon supporter, as we know. And I used to sit there with my buddies and rip into whoever was coaching and go, what are we doing? What the hell? They should be doing this. They should be doing that. They're just the perfect armchair critic. Now, ever since I've been coaching, we've been going on the footy and my mate's like, what is he doing? He does that. He's doing this. He's doing that. And I'll be like, dude, you have no idea what's being told. You have no idea. And he goes, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I hate it when someone tells me and they have no idea what's being said. Yeah. And it could be as simple as, why didn't you blitz that ball screen? We tried to blitz the ball screen.
Yeah, it just that was didn't the work. Instruction. It didn't happen.
Yeah. We all, and so now trying not to, you know, get worked up on all those little things and understanding we've all been victims of it and we've all been on the other side. Yep. Where we've watched the game and go, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? And you find out actually the full story after the game and you feel a little bit guilty. It's like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to question that. That's, you know, it's one of those things that you do have to be careful. But there is also, if you look at it on the flip side, there is so many ways to coach this game and there's so many ways that work. That's why you just got to love like college hoops or even the NBL now. Like there's so many systems going in. We've got the flex right now with the Perth Wildcats. We have that flow base that Sydney runs. Cairns do all those ball screens to get, you know, Machado, Newbill and all this misdirection to get their guys in the ball screens. Now, one of those teams are winning. Or plus Melbourne United, they have all their sets and spread out and get Goulding open. So if let's say Cairns' system wins the championship.
Everyone adopts that the next season.
Is that now the only way that works? Well, what if that flow-based system that the Kings run where they read and react? Like now, is that the only way that works and we say the rest suck? There's just so many ways. And so it's trying to sift through and find what opinions, you know, there's that has – what's the word I'm looking for here, Romy?
I've got no idea what you're going,
mate. That has some, I guess, evidence and value behind it. Yeah, well, you did know. Thanks, Robbie. Come on, mate.
Setting you up.
Yeah, thanks.
It's this guy.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it was a screener in junior careers, mate. That's about the extent of my skill set.
Be quicker.
Sprint the screen. Here we go.
Sprint to the screen, mate. But and that's you have to sift through and find out what opinion matters, and everyone's going to have different people.
Yep,
and that's okay as well.
And people are allowed to have an opinion.
Yeah, like, of course.
I mean, I will absolutely sit in a game on a Friday night and go, "Why aren't they doing this?" But I don't project that to everyone else either. Mm. Like I just sit on that myself and say, "Well, I wonder why they didn't do this." And if I ever talk to that coach, sometime it'll be, "Why didn't you?" Like there are plenty of times on Friday nights and all four HP coaches and myself are regularly out on Friday nights watching games. Sometimes we'll go up and talk to the coaches afterwards. Sometimes we won't, depending on what it is. But sometimes you get to ask the question, sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just shelve it and it's like, I'll check in on that coach again in 3-4 months time and see what they're doing. And they may have addressed it already. You know, sometimes you need to bring it up, sometimes they don't.
I can't remember who said it. It was pretty recent though, and the quote of "Don't ever take criticism from those you wouldn't take advice from." Ooh. And I think that's a pretty pointed quote that I'm myself trying to live by at the moment, because if we let the people that you wouldn't take advice from get inside our heads with their criticism, It can become an ugly place.
And it's tough.
Yeah.
We're all human.
Yeah.
You try to listen to everybody, don't you? Mm. And try, because you want to have that positive mindset that.
Yeah. Well, an open mindset.
Yeah, you can learn from everyone. But there's times where you feel like all you're doing is copying criticism from a certain individual and it can get into your head, like you said. Yeah, yep. It wears you down and starts the impact on your well-being. So it is really difficult to figure out. When do you stop listening?
Mm.
And who, you know, who do you listen to next after that? And it's tough. It's, again, this is something that I think every coach is sitting here or sitting in their car listening, going, well, how starts thinking about everyone giving them advice and criticism. When do you stop? And that's the hardest part, because you don't want, well, I might have people stop listening to me soon, but
we'll remove you from the podcast.
Yeah, that's fine. But it is difficult.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
And I think it starts with us as coaches. So the great thing about the story you told about going to the football is that now you're on the coaching side of things. You've changed the way you approach other coaches. And granted, you're in a stand with 50,000 other people. At the end of the day, what you're saying won't make it back to that coach. But just that mindset of, we don't know what the message was. We don't know if that athlete's ran past and said, hey, I can't go anymore, or I'm injured or something, I need a sub, or I'm going to vomit, or whatever it might be. We don't know that. So we as coaches can develop that mindset of, I guess, giving the coach a bit of a break in the game and trying to assess it from more so how it would feel if you were coaching, or again, we don't know what's going on sort of mindset. That will then also make it easier for when other outside influences start to creep into our coaches to create that fraternity. You know, I can come to you and say, oh, Hash, like, I've got these people saying this about me, and we can talk about it because I know that you won't be one of them. You know, and it's, well.
Don't tell her. Don't tell her.
You know what I mean. Yeah. So I think if we can create that fraternity within coaching, yep, I think it'll go a long way into helping the mental health of all of our coaches and hopefully keep them in the game longer.
No question. My last one, don't be in a hurry to get to where you want to go. Enjoy this thing. Like, this is, we've seen it a lot where coaches get one job and it's immediately, what's my next one? Now what's my next one? Now
give us the Coops quote. How do you get the next job? Do a good job at the one you're at.
Exactly. Your coaching career can be really short. I know people that go through the state pathway in particular, and I was one of those. I gave everything to that thing for 10 years. And it's almost like once you've got your third go as head coach, you're out. And you've got to go and weigh and find out, what can I replace this with? It turns out life. You can go and get a life outside of basketball. But for a lot of people, they're in a real rush to get to that next job and next job and next job. And it's actually, you know what? Relax.
Yeah.
Like, just take your time with this thing and enjoy it, savor it. Like, we're lucky to be involved in a fantastic sport. Not everyone gets this opportunity.
No.
So don't be in a rush to get to where you get to. It doesn't mean you can't be ambitious, or you can't go searching for other opportunities. There's plenty of stuff out there, but just don't be in a rush to move forward, because you'll gloss over stuff and you can't beat experience. The more experience you have, the better you're going to be as a coach.
And there's learning moments in every situation, without a doubt.
Yep. I still remember assisting plenty of people over the course, and what not to do was something I took away from pretty much everyone. Like, I wouldn't do it that way, and here's why I wouldn't do it that way. And that's just as valuable to me as how to do something. So you'll take something from everyone. Everyone has something to offer you.
Which we're allowed to have a difference of opinion. And and doesn't mean, here's my thing too, Robbie. If you and I have a difference of opinion,
you're wrong.
That doesn't mean you're now a dick. And you're an idiot. Look,
I can be that separately, yes, to my opinion, no question.
That doesn't mean that's the way we have to think. Correct. It's, no, Robbie does it this way, and I choose to do it this way, and Zoe, you choose to do it that way. And guess what? All three, the reason why we've got that opinion and we value that is because it's probably worked somewhere along the line for us. And that's, we do with what works. We go with what works. And that's life as well, right? Yeah. And that's my biggest, that's probably, if I've been pretty standard on this podcast, I haven't had anything controversial.
It's been a little disappointing.
I've been good. That'd probably be my biggest gripe. We hate on each other way too much. We have so many good coaches and so much to learn, and that's our other, and we've talked about, that's our other hard issue, is we've got so many great coaches, we don't have enough positions, and we wish we could create all these other teams we could give people to, but doesn't mean we have to hate on them just because they got the job this year. Like, let's get around each other. Let's lift each other up. Let's become the number one hotspot talent bed, Victoria coaching. Like, let's get the most coaches out of Victoria. We'd love to see that. And we do it by working together and getting behind each other and doing really good in the spot that we're in right now. So if you have an under 16 5 team at Dandenong, then you coach that under 16 5. Sorry. If you have that under 16 5 team, you do that job really, really well. And who knows? Next year, you may have a fours. the year after, you may get the twos. Who knows? But if you do that job really well, you're now putting yourself in a position to get that job. But if you don't and you're more worried about that next step, then you're not going to do the job properly you're in.
Similar to the very first point we made about winning being everything, and if you're dictated by winning and losing, you're probably going to lose more than you win.
Oh.
It's a similar thing with this here. If you put a time frame on where you want to be in, you know, so in, I've got the 16 fives this year, in 2 years I want to have the ones, and in 3 years after that I want to be on the state bench, and in four, you're actually setting yourself up to fail. Time limits on things, if you're going to put time limits on things, it's, hey, by the end of this year, my kids will be able to do this, this and this.
Mm.
Or they'll be at least exposed to this, this and this. That will help you as a coach a lot better than in 12 months' time, I'm going to be coaching this or doing that or in this position, because you don't have control of that. As you said, there's so many coaches, so many great coaches in this state, and not really a lot of jobs. So, you know, look after the job you've got, do the best job at that you can, and then you'll see doors open. And again, if you're allowed to be disappointed if you miss out on things, of course, you know, you put an application in, you might interview, whatever it might be. It's like a real life job. If you miss out, it's disappointing. You're allowed to be disappointed, but it's certainly not the fault of the person who got the job.
We got time for one more, Robbie?
We got time for one more. What do you got?
Two parts.
Yep.
Firstly, develop. I wish I developed my own philosophy from the get-go,
yep.
What I valued, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to get out of it.
And revisit that along the way too.
Second part.
Ah,
second, there was a two-parter, Robbie. And it's evolving, yep. Always.
Be adaptive with it.
And we are so lucky right now. We have so many resources, so many things we can check out. It's just right there, click of computer. Like, I've got my phone and laptop right next to me. I can access something straight away. Making sure we don't take everything that a coaching, like, so Chris Oliver came out in January and did a really interesting clinic. I don't just take everything Chris Oliver did and then put it straight into my philosophy and straight into my practice. We have to take what we think fits our philosophy. And, you know, it's been really interesting over in this job. We do obviously a lot of interviews and we read a lot of applications and so on. And the amount of times we see contradiction in people's systems or beliefs and values because they've just heard so many great gems. And they've gone, I'll take that. And, oh, this will sound good. But then we have to sit down and go, well, hold on.
In practice,
yeah,
it doesn't work.
Yeah. You've contradicted yourself. And if I'm thinking of that, imagine what your players are thinking. And then is your philosophy working the best it can? So being able to take – and who knows? Like, your philosophy may be completely different 3 years down the track. And that is okay as well.
Yep.
Some people don't change ever. That can be sometimes an issue, or it can also work for people. I am a big believer in that your philosophy has to continue to evolve because the game is changing, the way it's being played is changing, the way we teach certain things are changing. So how do we adapt that and put it into your philosophy?
And what's really interesting, you write it down. Like, it's one thing to have a philosophy where you think, okay, this is what I believe in, but write it down. And I know part of the performance course we did a couple of years ago, we had to write down our philosophy and it had to be 2 pages long. I sat there and it's like, I don't know that I'm going to get 2 paragraphs, let alone 2 pages.
A lot of the time.
Four pages later.
I started stressing, like, is this enough? Like 2 pages. And now you have to be very, very particular on what you're writing. Very specific. Mate, that was tough.
It was hard.
Like, I remember texting you guys and a few others going, hey, man, what have you done? Like, I'm not sure. And now I still review that and look at it and how do we change? And, you know, it's some deep thinking you've got to go into. Well, I've been doing this. I don't know if this works. And again, listen, I'm a sucker for a podcast. I'm listening to Basketball Immersion and all these other ones. And the one thing I learned very early on, and he has so many different coaches that come in with so many different systems and beliefs and values. After a while, I was like, man, I need to space these out. This is too much information coming at me at one time. And the reason why I'm big on it, because I fell victim to it as well.
Yeah, I think what I really loved about what you just said was
everything
from top to
word
bottom.
For word.
Thank you.
No, was, you know, making sure you are coaching is stealing. So stealing the things that you want to steal that work for you and make it your own. So we don't want a state full of Ashanets, as great as that might be.
No, we do not. One is enough, mate. One is enough.
But
what? Come on, guys.
But, you know, there might, or we don't want a state full of Chris Olivers. The stuff that he did was outstanding. I really loved it. But if I then go and try
if I go try and
be him, then I'm doing myself a disservice.
Oh, without a doubt. I took over from Mike Zeppel, and Robbie can probably attest to this. The first 2 days, I was trying to be Mike Zeppel. I was trying to.
Yeah, I was like going to say. Little coffees everywhere. Desk was just like coffees everywhere.
It was, the coffees were everywhere. I went through 2 cans of gel. It was unbelievable trying to talk like him, do everything the same, and I realised this is ridiculous. This is not how I roll. I'm Ash Arnott.
Mm.
I'm going to make some jokes. Some will laugh, some will not. That's normal. That was the perfect time to go with the Shula laugh. Unbelievable. You have set me up. Conspiracy's coming true. This is a big collusion. I saw the eye contact between both of you. But you've got to be yourself, be authentic, and that's a part of your philosophy. You have to be you. You have to coach the way you are. And awesome point. I realised very quickly I'm not as smooth or good-looking as Michael Zeppel.
But you're better in other areas. The jokes.
Absolutely.
The jokes. Absolutely. No question.
Yeah, no question. Thank you.
That does wrap us up for today. Big thanks to Broadmeadows Stadium for hosting us out here. Big thanks to you two guys for jumping in as well. Zoe, safe travels to Wodonga.
Thank you.
Same distance, I think, home. What's yours to Wodonga?
3 hours, 7.
Roughly the same. Yeah, roughly the same. Back to Clyde.
What I would love this week, though, is if other coaches have got any learning moments from their own coaching experience or things that they wish they knew about when they first started coaching, drop them in the comments on Facebook or use the hashtag Talking Split on Twitter, because it's a really interesting – like, I know all of us did this. As soon as we worked out what the topic for this week's podcast was, we all went away and researched something. And we did a little bit of work on the – and it's actually a really good reflective process for each of us that have come back with a different slant on it. But – there's a whole lot of info in there that we're now, I think, better for actually reviewing it.
Absolutely, and we still didn't even hit on all the points.
No, exactly. I've still got 4 more. So I might throw those out as a bit of a starting point once the pod drops.
Yep.
And people can reply to those and get involved
as well. Yeah, no, we'd love to hear them. It'd be really cool. The interactions have been awesome.
And Ash will reply this time.
Yeah, no, tell Dom it's coming.
Yeah.
By the time the pod drops, my 85 characters would have been sent back to Dom.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Good luck with your coaching. Again, if you can, please like, share, retweet, leave ratings, leave reviews, and subscribe to the podcast. It would be greatly appreciated. We do appreciate all the interaction we get. So good luck with your coaching, and we'll talk to you guys next week.